Welcome to Flip Table Theology, a weekly conversation centered around flipping tables of oppression, injustice, privilege, division, and religion as acts of faith and worship.
We are so excited you guys are joining us at this table. Grab a cup of coffee or a cup of tea and let's dive in.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Flip Table Theology. I am one of our hosts, Christy Love, and I am joined by my other two regular hosts today, Holly Madden and Rue Lowen. And I'm also joined by a special guest today that I'm kind of excited about. My youngest kiddo, Lynn, is going to be joining us for this podcast today. Do you want to say hi?
Hello!
So a few weeks ago, we did an episode around this table with Rue and Holly and I, and we were talking about neurodivergency in the church. We were talking about different ways that we, in our own experience as faith leaders, have tried to be more incorporating of neurodivergency, more accommodating, and we tried to share some takeaways and some tips for other faith leaders. We also talked about some theological implications of neurodivergency, and if you were listening to that episode, I made the comment that, and we shared kind of our own personal passions and experiences with neurodivergency. Holly shared, you've got a kiddo on the spectrum. I've got two on the spectrum, and made the comment, maybe I can get them to join us. And so one of them has agreed to join us today. And so we're going to kind of return to that conversation, but also just really kind of process through some lived experience and what is it like, a day in the life kind of thing, to do life in the mind and body of someone who just happens to think and view and engage with the world a little bit differently than others. So one of the things that we know very well about people who are neurodivergent is that they often can get really hyper-fixated on things. So Holly, I'm going to start with you. Your little guy who is on the spectrum, what is our current hyperfixation that he has right now?
The biggest one right now is definitely all things Kung Fu Panda. Actually, as we're talking, he's hanging out with your other kids in the living room, and I'm hearing him sing Kung Fu Panda at the moment. While he's coloring Kung Fu Panda sheets while he has the Kung Fu Panda figurines. I think this is one of those weird things I had no expectation for, was how many toy companies and like consumerism stuff that you can buy when you have someone who is in love with a TV show or a movie. Like, how many of them do not create an entire set of all the characters? And this is now like hyperfixation, like number six, where we've had multiple meltdowns over the fact that one singular members missing from a figurine set, and it takes us on crazy journeys to try to figure out a way to solve that for him. So he has this extraordinary capacity to like mimic the movie word for word, especially sound effect for sound effect, after only watching it once or twice because of that hyperfixation of like when it was on, it was all that his little brain was engaged with. So it's been fun. I've learned a lot about Kung Fu Panda. I'm also very grateful as a mom of a four-year-old of a movie choice that has multiple movies that go with it. So anytime we can hyperfixate on something that has a variety, that is a win, huge win.
Absolutely. Okay, so Lynn, what is a hyperfixation that you have had in the past?
Oh boy. Where do I start? I don't know. I have had a lot of them with animals. Trying to think. Bracelets. I go through endless of money with a hyperfixation and spend a lot of money and then end up lasting a couple of weeks and then not using it again.
So what does that look like when you move on to the next hyperfixation?
I don't usually touch it ever again. I usually pass it down to Holly's kids.
Fair.
I feel like you have a really beautiful pair of roller skates that sit up on one of your shelves in your room.
Okay, but roller skates get painful. That's the reason why I've stopped that. Doing it on concrete is painful.
That's fair. Yeah. So what is your current hyperfixation?
So my current one is I have a bearded dragon and I'm obsessed with her, but also I love Taylor Swift and I'm obsessed with all things Taylor Swift.
So. How obsessed are you with Taylor Swift?
Not a lot, just a little bit.
Is wearing Taylor Swift t-shirts. Shh.
You don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rue, last time that we had this conversation, you talked a little bit about Cooperative Youth Group mm-hmm. and the ways that you tried to create environments that were really conducive to kids on the spectrum and just the different ways that kids might process things and engage with things. So I want you to talk a little bit about a project that I know that you did with yes. students in the Cooperative Youth Group where you asked them to do a presentation on mm-hmm. their hyperfixations.
That lasted 2 hours.
Yeah, it was really long. I also, yeah, Lynn has also been, like, alongside with me for a lot of the youth group journey, the entirety of my time leading it. So we've got to share a lot of fun brainstorming ideas and a lot of feedback from what would be engaging. So that was an idea after we, you know, I feel like when people are hyperfixated, especially like teens on the spectrum, it's this like that can consume a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. consumes their personality.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you want to give space to that because there's not a lot of opportunity to really dive into a lot of hyperfixation unless you meet someone that's also hyperfixated about the same thing, but then that's really rare. So like, I wanted to, like, honor that mm-hmm. Time and energy and space and because it's really exciting when you're, like, mm-hmm. really care about something and, like, can give a lot of energy and time to it. So I had them do presentations but I had to connect it to a mental health thing mm-hmm. Because it was for a processing group. So and I had to, it was Ben 10 was one of the teens' hyperfixations at the time. So he created about a 30-slide presentation that went over every alien and different mental health struggles that they had within the Ben 10 universe, which was amazing, lovely. A lot of time and energy went into it. And yeah, I feel like those activities are really fun to do with teens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this practice of hyperfixating is well documented in individuals on the spectrum, but I also just want to name that hyperfixation can sometimes be really isolating mm-hmm. for people. Like you said, Rue, it's rare to sometimes find people who share your hyperfixation mm-hmm. that will get that level of excited about things with you. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit, everybody, mm-hmm. about just like how you've experienced that mm-hmm. In somebody in your life. Lynn, maybe you feel comfortable speaking to that. And, like, mm-hmm. how have some of those hyperfixations maybe felt, like, nobody cares about this issue mm-hmm. quite as much as I do, or nobody's, you know, thinking about this the way that I am?
For me, is when I become hyperfixate on something like bearded dragons, I want everybody to know every single fact or every single thing about mm-hmm. a bearded dragon. And, like, that's all I want to talk about. And I feel like a lot of people don't always want to hear those things because, like, they're in meetings or having conversations. And it's like, Lynn, not right now. But I'm like, but I have this fact that you need to know about.
Yeah.
And, like, I surround myself around that. And it's hard because not all the time everybody wants to hear about every single fact. And that's just hard to wrap around my brain because what I think is everybody should learn this thing that I'm learning right now or mm-hmm. that I know about. Mm-hmm. And that's just hard because not everybody wants to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know for myself, both in my relationship with Lynn, with your kiddos, like, and then my relationship with my littlest, I've noticed even in someone so little that, like, disappointment that can set in when it's like, mm-hmm. I have something I want to talk about and share with you. And I've seen that a lot in him, especially because I think sometimes at his age, there's still a disconnect from, like, you know, the difference between if you're saying mm-hmm and nodding your head, I think you're engaged, versus when you get to be a teenager and you're like, I can tell you're not actually listening to me.
Yeah.
So I think he can still engage with those, like, head nods. But it's in that when he's been around people that are like, oh, I've never seen that. And, like, it's just this, like, shutdown of that mm-hmm. that I've seen in him, kind of this, like, I don't know how else to interact. And
I can get mad at it. and yeah. being really angry.
Yeah. And like just how integrated that is. Like we went, I got the privilege of taking Lynn on a nature walk yesterday with Hudson, and we were like hiking and come upon this beautiful lake, and it was this magical experience that we had had a ton of rain here the last few days, and so Lynn was busy hyperfixating on catching little frogs, and we're just like enjoying the magic of the outdoor world, and come upon a rock in the middle of the pond that had a little turtle on it, and this little turtle had like his little back leg extended like he was in a yoga pose, and Hudson immediately was like, that's Master Oogway from Kung Fu Panda, and just like how integrated in his world his hyperfixation is, and just how much I appreciate being around, you know, Lynn, who's in Hudson's world, who's like, yeah, you know, what do you think Master Oogway is doing, and just able to interact with him and honor that mm-hmm. and validate that. And I know for myself, something that really stood out to me was he had his OT appointment one day, and that was in a season of when he was hyperfixated on Encanto, mm-hmm. and his OT came in after a couple weeks of hearing him talk about it and let him know, like, guess what, I watched it this weekend all by myself because I wanted to be able to talk to you about this, mm-hmm. and I also bought some stickers so when you leave here you can pick from an Encanto sticker, and that just meant yeah. the world mm-hmm. to me, and it was like, oh, and it was so inspiring of just like how much that even shifted in his interaction. And I know what I experienced
just
with...
Just the littlest things make the biggest difference.
Yeah. And I experienced this with you and with your siblings, like, because you've got multiple neurodiversity in your family. My own Instagram feed is full of bearded dragon content and yeah. rock climbing content from one of your other kiddos, because it's been one way that I can... Mm-hmm. immerse myself in knowing more. I also get to, now that they're teenagers, send them, or adults now, you're all adults now, am I gonna send them mm-hmm. reels, but it's been this like encouragement to me to keep like, it's mm-hmm. important to put time into this because it's a way that I connect with them,
yeah.
and I know seeing that in you, seeing that in my littlest, like this means the world when I engage at that level with them, even if it's not something I had an interest in before.
Mm-hmm. So, Lynn, let me ask you this question, because knowing that, you know, hyperfixations and those kind of interest level, they do come and go, but when you're in the midst of one, like, it's kind of all-inclusive, all-immersive, I know that, like, for you, that is something that you enjoy connecting around,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
like
sure.
Holly's talking about, you like it when we sit down and listen to Taylor Swift stuff with mm-hmm. you, and you like it when we all watch the Eras Tours movie together, and mm-hmm. Or, you know, we'll listen to you talk about Bearded Dragons, and, like, you really appreciate that. So from an inclusive standpoint, for those of us, especially, like, in faith communities that are trying to be inclusive of people on the spectrum, what does that feel like when people really want you to connect in a more traditional way around conversations and things, and they're maybe not willing to engage in some of those hyperfixation kind of conversations? How does that make you feel?
I usually shut down, and I usually isolate myself and just feel very, very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels the safest to me to usually just stay quiet and
mm-hmm.
not talk sometimes.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen you as, like, especially whenever, like, versus, like, interacting with other teens that are also neurodivergent or, like, have similar interests or, like, that kind of stuff, and then coming into a really, like, traditional setting, the, like... Like, because you, I think you have a good capacity of connecting with people, but I do think I've seen you get, like, socially tired and drained
yeah.
really
yes.
quickly.
I can get very exhausted with...
Yeah, so it's, like, this short time of, like, I'll talk about this thing for a little bit.
I can handle about a couple of hours of, like, talking and interacting, and then I just hit this wall, and I'm like... Okay, I need to be away from everybody. I need to have music in my ears, or I need to be outside. I need to be away from something. Or, like, if I don't, then, like, I just get so angry inside and, like, get irritable, and I can't handle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make that time to be able to calm down and, like, decompress,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and calm down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which I feel like I've been really proud of you, especially over the last few years, because I feel like you have done a really good job of learning to advocate for yourself. So we'll be in situations and I'll notice you go move into the corner and put headphones in.
I usually do my word search.
And you've got your word search, or you're snuggling with Willow, your bearded dragon. And it's, you know, it's kind of like you're assessing the situation of, it's okay for me to disengage in this space and still be in an environment where maybe I can't go to my room right now and be able to curl up in my bed. And so I extend a lot of like pride for you in that, that you've found that ability to, but also know there are situations you can't do that in, or situations you're called out in that if we are in public and someone doesn't understand that about you. And I know that can be really
stressful.
Usually, yeah, we have went to a lot of like big conferences or things, and there's a lot of times like there's just hundreds of people in the room, and I can't get away from I can't get away from everybody, and like I just get like so anxious. I usually go in a panic attack because like I just can't get away, and I feel super trapped, and I get sweaty and anxious. And that the only biggest way for me to be able to calm down in those moments is usually putting my headphones in, and that's like the most discreet thing I can do, is just put my little earpods in and hide away from that. Or if I'm able to step outside or go to the bathroom, the best place is to hide in a stall in the bathroom to calm down for a little bit. If you're in like,
but not get public. Yourself locked in.
Yes, I've done that too many times and had a panic attack because I got locked in the bathroom and I couldn't get out. That has happened too many times.
We were at an event years ago in Michigan, Holly and I.
It was so bad.
I was on stage preaching, and Holly was on stage getting ready to leave worship. This was like kind of pre-deconstruction days, so a little bit more traditional piece. And I noticed that Lynn was not in the room, but there were a couple hundred people in the room.
Also did not have my phone on me.
Right. No, you were younger. I don't even think you had a phone.
I didn't. I had nothing to get a hold of anybody.
But I remember
banging on the door.
I was gonna say, but I remember seeing Bob get up and walk out of the room. And then came back a little while later with Lynn, who I could clearly tell there was something wrong. But again, I could not address it at that moment. And so when it was all over, Lynn comes running up to me and is like yelling.
Clinging to you.
Was like so intense in that moment, needing to tell me what had happened and explain that they had locked themselves in the bathroom stall and couldn't get out for like 15, 20 minutes.
I was like screaming too, and nobody heard me. And like, I just started to bang on the stall. So don't get locked in the bathroom, but...
We have some, like, pro tips on how to find a safe...
Keep a pick lock on you so you can lock... Yeah. Pick the lock.
Yeah.
Keep your phone on you now.
Yeah.
So I know that being forced to try to assimilate or, like, act more like everyone else, especially in conversations or social interactions, is really hard, and it's really draining for you. What are some other things that you maybe experience in public for right now? We'll kind of stay just very generalized, that some people may not realize are really difficult for you personally, but that maybe you've talked to other people on the spectrum who you just feel like this seems to be something that I share in common with others. I can name a few if you can't.
Yeah, do you want to start?
So I think about like when we may be someplace and people see you and they automatically want to give you a hug.
Mm.
And some...
I used to be a hugger person, but I've really... I have to like feel it, because if I'm not, I get stiff and anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You have to have a... really comfortable connection with somebody
to
want to hug anyway.
I was able to just like run up and say hi to a lot of people, but now I'm like, if I don't know you, I'm like very hesitant. I will not like, and I usually come off really mean when you meet me, when I'm not hopefully mean. I come off that because like I'm in a new place, I'm in with new people, and like I don't just see like, oh, this is going to be a great interactive. I'm like, okay, I need to know where the next exit is. I need to know where this is. I need to know like who you are and like all of these things, because like it just makes me so anxious being in a new place. And so like I can't just like focus on that, like, meaning somebody. I really struggle to ask that, so I come off very mean when all I really do is want to have a relationship, but I am not that person that can do that easily when it's just really hard for me.
Mm-hmm. And what I really want to make sure that listeners hear from what you just said, Lynn, that I think is really important is a couple of things. One is how much your brain is working all the time. Mm-hmm. And like it just doesn't turn off. And so you've constantly got this narrative, right? And so name some things that maybe kind of go through your mind. You said, like, where are the exits? Is this safe? Who are these people? How long are we going to be here?
Does somebody have a gun with you? Is somebody going to try to attack somebody? I have really bad food allergies. So, like, is there going to be something that gives me an allergic reaction? If there's a fight breakout, if there's a shooting or something breaks out, I need to know the next exit. I need to know 5 steps ahead before we enter this place. I need to know what this place looks like. So I have like the mind preparedness of like what it's gonna look like. So I'm already prepared of that so I can enjoy where I'm at instead of trying to figure out and watch everything. Because like just going to places that I have no clue what they are make me beyond anxious because I don't know what to expect. And that's just...
I know. There's a lot of times you'll, even before we go somewhere, especially like if I'm around, you'll ask questions like going to a place, like, can I put my headphones in if I get really overwhelmed? Is like, are there bathrooms, all gender bathrooms, or is it going to be gendered bathrooms? Like, where is the bathroom? Yeah. Is it going to be the nearest?
Can
like, just, can I step outside? Is there an access to the outside world? Can I bring Willow? And just like this list of, is it okay if I sit and do my word search if I get overwhelmed? And it's just kind of this giant checklist of things that...
bring safe food, like...
I've also seen you, when we are preparing to go somewhere, you are an expert researcher. You do an amazing job of researching the world. And part of that is kind of dual purposed, I know. You research wonderfully around a hyperfixation. And so you can tell us all kinds of things about bearded dragons and Taylor Swift and stingrays from previous hyperfixations and other things. But I know that there's also an element for you where research feels a little bit like arming yourself with preparedness and information. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that drive to try to research and not be surprised?
So, like, if we go on vacation or we go to a certain place, I like to be prepared about, like, the city. So I like to do extensive research on the city of where we're going to. Is it a safe place for queer people? Is it a safe place for people that have disabilities? Is it a safe place? What are the cases that have happened in the past with shootings, violence, and especially the LGBTQ plus community? Is like, I had to have those steps to know how I should act and how I should present myself a lot of times. And I need to know what to pack and like those things of like, if there is a shooting, I need to know what to have. If there is like, if there's bad weather in this city, I need to know what to have that. Or like, I just need to know every single thing. And so I'm a person that packs thousands and thousands of things because I need to have that to make myself feel at peace to go to somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So again, what I hope that we are hearing as we listen and learn from your lived experience and kind of the way that your brain processes, Lynn, is no matter what role you are in life, if you are in leadership in any capacity, if that's as a faith leader, a lay leader in a church, if you're a teacher in a classroom, if you are a business owner, like whatever that looks like, one of the easiest things that you can do to really be more accommodating to people on the spectrum is to try to aid in that preparedness factor.
Always prepare people. That be ahead of them to be like, if you're in a classroom and a teacher, be like, this is what we're doing today. Mm-hmm. This is what's going to be happening. Because that gives me be able to be prepared for every single thing that happens for that day. And I'm not as anxious and I'm, quote unquote, not as intense. A lot of people would say for autistic people. Mm-hmm. But because we know what to expect, and that just calms our body to know mm-hmm. what we're going to be experiencing, and we don't have to be thinking of thousands and thousands of things that could be happening.
Yeah. I feel like one of my favorite Lynn quotes is, ask a question and we'll be like, I don't know. And Lynn's like, I need you to know.
I need you to know what's going
to
happen.
I need to know what the next week looks like. And if you don't have that, I need you to prepare now.
Yeah.
And so that's something you and I have kind of gotten into the practice of is usually we kind of go through weekly and daily. So there's kind of like a weekly, it's usually on Sunday nights. Lynn's like, what's this week look like? And so typically I pull up my calendar and we kind of talk through the week. And if there's something that maybe brings up some anxiety or is different from our normal routine, like this week I was out of town all day yesterday, and so we had to switch around some things and make sure that you felt comfortable with changing schedules, because usually you spend the whole day on Thursday, Polly, and we had to switch Thursday to Tuesday this week, and that was a little bit stressful, but we kind of worked through that. And then we do the same thing every night usually. What's tomorrow look like? Here's what it's going to be. You know, as far as I can tell, this is kind of what that schedule is going to look like, so that it's fresh in your mind and you just feel like you're going to
bed
equipped.
I know what to be prepared. It's like last night there were some things like I didn't know exactly what that day was going to be like today. And that made me so restless to sleep last night because I was so anxious about today because there was things that weren't normal. And I couldn't handle that. And I went through thousands of scenarios of like, I need to be prepared for this. So if this happens, I need this and I need this and then this. And like, I couldn't sleep last night because I was so anxious about all the what ifs today. And so the very high anxiety of that.
I feel like I, one, have really benefited from your advocacy for yourself, Lynn.
I make you a planner.
So as someone with really bad ADHD, and also just like
we butt heads a lot.
I'm a bit more spontaneous, and Lynn is very gracious with me. But I've benefited a lot from it because whenever we, especially when I was running youth group, because there was a lot of teens that had that kind of, I need to be prepared for this. I need to know activities we're doing. I need to like have this laid out. It was really helpful to see how your brain, when I would mention things and ideas, how your brain would go through that process. Where my brain's just like, we could do this and this, blah, 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 blah.
And like, I'm like, okay.
What materials do we need? And like,
let's plan this and not just think about it.
And even details that I didn't think of, like the sensory stuff, and like especially like getting recently into that leadership position, like being like, okay. You know, there's the lights need to have a dimmer on them, or they let's not do the strobe things. And like
when we kept moving locations, that was
a huge thing. Whenever there's change of scenery, and like
we always had to figure out the safe place because for us, we always had to have like something the same in a room. Because if we didn't, that would make me anxious. But I know as my friends, that would make them anxious because there was nothing familiar to them.
Yeah. Having similar like pictures hanging up, or like
pillows,
bookcases, like that, the similarity and familiarity of it was a huge safety piece. When it came to any sort of change and shift in locations or plans.
So let's talk a little bit more about sensory. You mentioned sensory, Rue. That was on my list of things to ask about, Lynn. Having done life with you your whole life, sensory has always been a thing that we've had to be mindful of. And for you, it's really all five senses. It's not, I mean, sometimes individuals on the spectrum might have like one particular sense that is more heightened or sensitive or aware than others. So it's not necessarily always that all five senses can be really triggering. So kind of be aware of that and pay attention to that. But what do you think right now in life for you? What do you feel like right now is maybe one of the biggest sensory triggers that you're struggling with right now? Because I know it kind of changes and ebbs and flows in different seasons.
There's a lot of change going on, so that's a very big anxious part of that.
I know, like, touch has been a thing at certain points, and, like, texture specifically. like whenever
I forgot the 5 centimeters. That's why I didn't know. I'm looking at your posters in your office trying to see if there's
all
a 5 centimeters.
You're like, wait, hold on.
Okay, so let's go through them one at a time.
Okay, cool.
So Bruce talking about touch.
Yeah.
So I think about a couple of nights ago, I was cleaning out my closet and switching closets for the seasons, and I yelled at Lynn to come up to my room.
Century of clothes sucks.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started.
Because I was cleaning out some things, and I thought maybe some of these would be things that Lynn would like. And so instead of just saying, would you like this? Lynn's like, hand it to me. I have to touch it. I have to try it.
I'm not a person. I can't do online shopping. As mm-hmm. much as I wish I could, I can't. I have to be a person that goes into the store. I have to try it on. Jeans, oh my gosh, don't get me started. Mm-hmm. They are awful.
Unless they have holes in them. That's.
You can breathe and move much better with holes if you have jeans. But shirts, I have to have them baggy and loose. I can't have them tied on my armpits. And tags, don't get me started on tags. Dear goodness.
Can I tell a funny Lynn story?
Oh, God. Is it me getting stuck in jeans?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
So Lynn was maybe, like, 6.
It happens too often. And I still have it.
And it was kind of, like, right at the beginning of, like, the skinny jeans craze when it was, like, the jeggings. Mm-hmm. And so we had
to self. Let's make sure that I was in the
Lululemon leggings.
Yeah, where I would mismatch my outfits and they were not matching because I refused to wear jeans.
Well, right. So we went to the leggings phase after this happened. So we went shopping for back to school and we bought all of these different really cute jeggings, like, you know, the skinny jeans. And we came home to get Lynn ready and, like, try things on. And so, like, it was always this tradition in our family. After we went shopping back to school, we would always do, like, a fashion show. And so each kid got to pick, like, their song.
Uh-huh.
And they'd come out and model their clothes. And it was, like, this funny thing. So, anyway, so Lynn goes in to put their first outfit on and never comes out. And I heard this, like, thumping in their room and, like, kind of like noises, and I'm like, what is happening? And I go in there, and Lynn's like laying on the ground trying to get out of the pants that are stuck, and Lynn's like, I'm stuck in my pants.
But there's other times that I have screamed bloody murder and had a full panic attack because I couldn't get out of them, and I would walk out of my room and be like, Mom, help, I can't get out of them.
Yeah.
And
but we share that because, like, sometimes I don't think that we always understand that something as small
mm-hmm.
as a new shirt that I'm wearing today that has a tag that's
ruining
rubbing
your
wrong,
whole day.
How? Tell me how it can ruin your whole day.
It
You're right.
It makes your whole sense body, what is the word?
Like, whole nervous system.
Yeah, mess up. Like, for
mm-hmm.
me, like, if I have put on a wrong shirt for the day, I'm done. I can't wear anything else on my body today. Like, if there is a tag,
it just, like, consumes
it's
your
like,
thoughts.
And, like, I can change a shirt, but it still feels like it's on my body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still feel like I cannot take it off of me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, don't get me started on haircuts. That's also a whole sensory thing. But
mm-hmm.
it's, like, shirts or jeans, like, if I put them on and then they don't fit right, then I
mm-hmm.
can't be wearing jeans for the rest of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's just, like, it has messed up my whole body, my whole mood. Like,
yeah.
I just can't bounce back.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I also have some sensory with clothing a little bit. Nothing to what you experience. That has given me a lot of empathy, though. And then both Ellie and Hudson have some sensory with clothing. And so there's this understanding, though, of, like, the autonomy of becoming an adult and being able to choose what you wear and having an understanding in yourself. I mean, funny story, yesterday we're in the car and, like, Lynn aggressively reaches back and, like, there's this ripping sound and I'm like, what did you do? And they're like, I had to rip a tag off, just, like, out of the middle
shirt
of nowhere.
And that tag wasn't fitting right, and I've gotten used to just,
like,
yanking it. We didn't have any scissors, so
I within seconds, it was gone.
Yeah.
But just the autonomy of, as an adult, to be like, I can dress myself, I can choose, I can get rid of clothes that do not, like, I know for myself, if I've had a bad sensory experience in it, like, it's gone, I don't, you know, I'm going to pass that on. But, like, my kiddos are younger,
it's
where, like,
still stuck in your brain.
Yeah, like, recognizing in them that I want to be really attentive to, like, if they describe not feeling comfortable in an outfit, like, giving them the autonomy to have some choice in that and giving them options. And I think of how often you maybe, especially in face settings where there's like a lot of like, you have to wear this outfit, and how many times that reactions, and I've seen this and you have experienced this myself, like it leads to a much higher level of reactivity because it's this like full body nervous system being activated discomfort. And it takes a while to calm down off of that. So even that piece of it, of recognizing even the texture of your chairs they might be sitting on, like the pew textures I think of in a lot of religious spaces, things like that can really always set somebody off.
You can always hide.
Pro tip.
Yeah, I know you're exactly right. I was going to say the same thing. Like, especially in a lot of conservative spaces where maybe there's a dress code assumption.
For church. And I was not always the one that liked to wear a dress because I was a kid that always loved to do cartwheels and things. And that didn't fit the modesty of dress code when I usually always wanted to wear leggings and a t-shirt. But I had to always dress up to where I was supposed to, and I hated it. Every single week, I hated wearing a dress a lot of times because I didn't want to wear those.
And especially if you're in a space where you have to continually go to a church on a Sunday or Wednesday night, like those spaces become places of dread. I've heard you talk a lot about is like, I'm dreading.
You don't get excited to go there anymore. It's like you are forced to have to go there. And it's like, I used to feel that a lot is I have to put this on, I have to go there, and I had to like, I had to put on a fake face, or like I had to act this way, or I just stay silent. There's like a lot of very uncomfortable places, and I never felt that comfortable.
Well, and I think there's a preparedness too. Like if it's an event happening in the evening where you could spend your whole day incapable of doing anything because you can't get your brain beyond that.
It surrounds you. You have to be prepared for that night. So you have to, like, all day, it's like people call us lazy because, like, it takes us all day to be prepared for something that night. Or, like, we do something for in the morning and then we're done for the day. That's not us being lazy. That is like working our brain 10 times more is because we went through all of these what ifs, and we worked through all of these things, and we then did this thing, and this thing took a lot of energy out, more than normal people energy, and then we're just exhausted, and it just is so draining, and like I just feel like I can't do anything for the rest of the day, and if I feel like I had to keep pushing myself, I get sick, and I don't feel good.
So let's talk about another sense. We talked about touch. Talk to me about sounds.
So I get, that's a very fun one in our family. Eating is very hard for me with just textures of food, but the sounds of people with a fork on a plate, or if I, there are so many sounds of like
paper.
Paper ripping. Oh my gosh, do not get me started. Cotton balls. Like there's
sorry, I also hate cotton balls. I think they're the worst.
Like I physically cannot think about it. I can't touch the ball.
It's been several times we've been eating, and all my fork will scrunch.
And then I'm like, I'm done. I can't do this.
That like, oh.
Or I just like physically, like it makes my body shake, and like I can't do it, and I just yell, and I'm like, stop it. And they're like, well, I didn't mean to. I'm like, I know, but I can't do it anymore. And that's when I'm like, okay, I have to leave this room. I have to go to my room. I have to get away from all the sounds, because if I hear one more sound, I will explode.
Which again can be a really isolating experience.
It is so draining.
And I've learned so much watching you as a mom getting to parent Lynn and your siblings, because I think, and now having Spectrum and our kiddo, like I appreciate seeing you in like public places and making sure before you leave, like we've packed Lynn's
headphones.
And like as you've gotten older, it's gone from the big soundproof bright, you had bright pink headphones for the longest time.
Yeah, the gunproof headphones. The
shooting range.
Yeah. Yeah, that were massive to now, like, and which is amazing, the progression of things like that and tools like that, where you either have your AirPods in or you'll have your loops. And your family's decisions to invest in those things for Lynn has been really inspiring. Just like the level of support of, like, we recognize that there are going to be settings, like going out to celebrate a family member's birthday dinner or wanting to take them somewhere really special. Like, I know you talk all the time about someday getting to go to the Eras Tour concert or going to see Taylor Swift in concert or something like that. And Lynn's like, I don't care, I'll go. But also knowing you, it would be like, what are these things I can have, to take care of myself?
There are several things that I have with me. But there is one, I love lavender, and that is something that can calm me down a lot, and that just helps my brain decompress, and like just like smelling something has really calmed myself. And if I put headphones in and I can just like, I can't always even listen to loud music. It's just like maybe some ocean waves in the background of just like super loud, but like when we're in settings, like going back to like going to big groups, like there are spots I can't handle it anymore. And like, I have to put headphones in, or there's a lot of places I just go in with headphones and I keep background sounds on, and like, I can turn it up and I can turn it down when I need it. And that has really helped me. But like going back to like going to the bathroom to hide in, or going outside and sitting outside in a tree for a couple of minutes. And just those couple of minutes can reset me and make me not as agitated as I was before. But if I didn't have that, I just, like, there's, my body just physically cannot handle it. And I can, like, shake. And then, like, I just burst out hysterically and shake. And it's exhausting.
And I think it's really important, too, to note, for those of you that are listening that may be in faith leadership, our faith communities and our sacred spaces are often full of a lot of noises that can be really dysregulating to people on the spectrum. So a lot of times there can be very loud music that is played. I know that's always been something that you've struggled with. Like, you love music, and when you don't have control over the volume of that music, that's really hard for you. So again, you know, we oftentimes, even at our church, we talked about this before, we had soundproof headphones, and
or you had a safe place. And that made it the biggest difference, is having churches that had safe places for people like us to go take a break. And so we didn't have to go sit on the disgusting bathroom floor. It's like we had a place that we felt welcoming and we felt safe to go take a moment to just take a deep breath. And it wasn't like we felt like we had to hide this of ourselves. It was like we feel welcoming because we have this space for us. And we're able to be who we are and decompress, and then still enjoy these places like normal people.
And a lot of times what we did was we had a TV in that quiet room. So, you know, if Lynn or others still wanted to engage with service and not be left out, they could choose to turn that on. A lot of times we had it running, but it was muted. And so then they could determine the volume level that they were comfortable with. And like, if they didn't want to hear anything at all, there was a sound machine in there. So like just being really attuned to the different way that sounds may play a role. If you've got a building that has hardwood floors and sounds echo, or chairs scrape, or, you know, sounds like that, just be very, very mindful of those things. And obviously we can't soundproof an entire building and make that a, you know, perfect for every single person, but we can be better aware.
Take a couple of precautions.
Right, and we can be better aware to offer.
We're not asking for a whole room of a soundproof. We're just asking maybe a night, like a big room, just something that we could feel welcoming and something that we could decompress in for a couple of minutes to calm down.
I think of how much you've learned to advocate for yourself, which is amazing. I also think that, like, the advocacy that you've done as a mom, and especially in faith spaces, because I think there was a season, and we've gotten to journey with your family for over a decade now. And part of that was, you know, we did attend a lot of faith communities together, and seeing there was a season even before we church planted where we were visiting a lot of different churches.
You could just tell from the get-go when you walk into a church that they're welcoming to, like,
there were spaces we would be in, and you would either just walk out with Lynn because you saw that in them, and then there were some spaces that we were a little bit more committed to where you would have amazingly hard conversations on an advocacy of, like, if this is causing so much stress in my child coming every single week, what is the importance of music at this level? What's the importance of strobe lights? What's the importance of this? And that pushback and that confidence to say, if we don't adjust that, like, this isn't fair for my kids, so, like, we won't come back. And I just, like, want to put that out there, like, listen to, especially if you do not exist in relationship with somebody who's on the spectrum, like, listen to the people who listen to those who are on the spectrum, who are in a place where they feel like they can talk, but also don't rely on them, rely on others who are in advocacy, like the parents and the people that are going to say and be probably very gut level honest if you ask them, this is stupid, don't do this, like, this is exhausting, and don't be a place that they have to walk out of. Don't be a place that they say you're not safe. Instead, say, what can we do?
I could never handle churches that were the big, obnoxious, had all the strobe lights, had the, like, it was like performing, basically. And it wasn't like you were there to talk about God and those kind of things. It was like you're there for, like, performing. And I could not handle being in those spaces because it was so loud and so...
So let's talk about that a little bit more. When you say I can't handle being in those spaces, several of those spaces that we visited, you were probably, I would say, between the ages of maybe, like, 7 to 12 in those seasons when we visited a lot of different spaces. I remember, I'm trying to think if you remember some of these things. I remember you physically getting nauseous and, like, throwing up and sick because of the strobe lights and because of the music and that sensory overwhelmness. Do you remember some other, like, ways that your body became dysregulated in that space?
Oh, I remember shaking. Like, I remember literally physically shaking so bad, like, I couldn't control, like, crying. It was like everything is too much, and, like, I couldn't escape it, and, like, my body just was about to explode. That's how I felt. Like, I couldn't control the shaking of it. Like, all the lights were, like, it was, like, messing with my brain.
I remember taking you out of a service once at a church that was really dysregulating for you. And we went outside, and you just kept saying, I feel like I'm on fire. You were like, your body was flushed and hot.
Just I remember a lot of times sweating.
Yeah, getting really sweaty.
I remember, like, sweating so much and shaking and, like, just feeling like I'm going to throw up because I, like, there was just so much, and I couldn't escape it. And, like... That's another part of feeling so isolated. It's like trying to be a part of those things, but, like, I physically can't. And, like,
when those spaces aren't made for you.
That's really hard because a lot of autistic people, society isn't made for. And so we do have to pick our, like, battles of what we want to go do and what we don't want to go do because, like, that might take up the whole week of our, like, nervous system, and it might take a week for us to, like, decompress, and so, like, do we really want to risk going to this thing and when we know it's going to dysregulate us and mess us up for the rest of the week? With a lot of people, they can just bounce back, but, like, with us, it takes us a while.
So I've heard you talk about smells. You talked about, like, your lavender and smells that are calming to you. We've talked some about sights and, like, all the light input and things like that that can be hard. I think the one that they just ripped the tag out of their shirt.
Sorry.
I think the one that we haven't touched on is taste. Is there anything you can think of that's triggering you?
Well, so I have a food allergy, and so this doesn't help at all.
You have multiple
allergies.
Lots of food allergies.
I have really bad allergies and allergic reactions, so I am just in general terrified of food. But I do not handle a lot of food with textures, and I really struggle with that. And so I can get grossed out by it just looking at it, and I can be like, oh, that does not look like that's gonna like sit well in my mouth. I physically cannot even picture that going in my mouth. And like and there is safe food for me, and I literally surround myself with all of my safe food. I'm not a person that go out of my safe food often because I have food allergies, and that also just makes me really scared, because if I do try something that I don't like the texture of, I like, it makes me want to throw up, and I can't usually eat for the rest of the day because it just...
Yeah. I vividly, like, again, getting to journey so much with you, and how for so long you would always bring safe food options with you anywhere you went.
Always had a little bag.
And you're now overly prepared with that. You always have some type of food safe option. Yeah. And you're very honest with people of like, these are safe options for me. And I think of how often you go to a setting, especially in a faith community, where you're maybe sharing dinner together and you don't have the option to choose what's going to be in front of you. And I know, as someone who aligns more with the way Rue lives, with like my ADHD and my capacity to not prepare and plan and having to adapt to that, and how often I've showed up in places and been like, oh, I didn't think about the fact that this is a meal that I don't know what we're being planned, and then like seeing it laid out and like, oh, this isn't safe for my little one, or this isn't safe for
don't you.
You
worry. I got you.
And how much you save. You're like, oh, don't worry, I brought a whole thing of microwavable macaroni, like for you and me and your kids. But how much that would change the game if we just had this mentality of like,
always
be honest if this is not something that you can eat for any reason, whether it be allergy, it be sensory, it be triggering, and having some of those backup options, and especially if you're in a community where you do relationship with people, knowing what some of those things are, most of those safe options are probably going to be pretty affordable options, a lot of comfort food items like macaroni and cheese, and just to go to that length of saying, I'm not going to shame you for not trying, and instead support you because I want you to engage. That's more important than you being forced to push through that.
I personally wish a lot of churches did that. A lot of churches go out and go make these big fancy bougie meals and like go serve them, and I wish they could have like some safe foods of like, once again, like Holly said, like nothing crazy expensive, Lunchables, SpaghettiOs, like macaroni cups, like just those kind of things that like feel safe for us, that we can still eat and we don't have to once again feel like we're excluded to this.
Or apologize for
it. Or that there's no judgment for it, because I think one of the things you see
I feel
happen,
so ashamed because I have to be like...
And then people make comments about it. Oh, you didn't like my peach cobbler
but I cooked
fried,
so hard.
You didn't like the fried chicken.
Oh, and we have had some of the most, I think, well-intentioned people that have been like, well, I'll make macaroni for the kids.
Yeah.
And they make these wonderful recipes that are delicious,
like,
but they...
Just craft macaroni
just
and cheese.
Craft.
Yeah. Well, and it's not even the needles and cheese. They add, like, crumbly thingies on top and vegetables on
and
the inside of it, which removes the comfort level, despite
can,
that it's good.
And I can say that for Hudson, it's like, Hudson and I, if it doesn't look normal of our daily, what we usually eat, then we're not going to touch it. Like, if it's a different color of Chinese, then we're not going to eat it. If it's...
I think a good rule of thumb...
always make it look the same.
I was going to say, with Lynn.
Yeah.
has always been, like, if I say we're having spaghetti, I need to clarify if it is Lynn's kind of spaghetti, or if it is... homemade noodles and homemade sauce, and that is not Lynn's definition
that's
of spaghetti.
That's the only reason why I love to go Holly's house, because they make my spaghetti. They call it now. It's the Lynn spaghetti.
It's Lynn's spaghetti. I think one of the things that I think is really important to kind of like name is, I think a lot of churches and faith leaders have this like misperception of like someone on the spectrum or someone with neurodiversity or has these like really like you these things that you need for your own like safety and support aren't understanding or empathetic to people's attempts or trying, where I feel like I've seen the exact opposite from you, Lynn, where it's like I understand either your own like with our ADHD, the tension in the ADHD and autism, or your, like, attempts at trying to make me feel safe here, but I just need this thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that empathy and understanding is there. It gets really combative whenever they mm-hmm. meet that with defensiveness already mm-hmm. and saying, like, well, I'm trying this thing. It doesn't give you voice to say, like, I see you're trying that thing. Because, like, most of the time, that's what you're going to say. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, I needed this mm-hmm. thing different.
Mm-hmm. Going into a lot of church places, I usually a lot of times mask. And that is personally very draining mm-hmm. because I can't authentically be myself. Because if I do, a lot of times it looks like I'm seeking attention because I'm being autistic, quote unquote, sometimes. And there's just some comments is like, you don't look autistic, or like some of those kind of things. And I'm like, well, I don't know how not to look autistic, or like, and like a big thing I do to calm myself down being in places is rocking myself. And like, sometimes people say that's like disturbing, and like, those things are just really hard because you want us to feel welcome, but like if we do things mm-hmm. then we don't feel welcomed because it makes you guys uncomfortable mm-hmm. when in general we're just trying to be ourselves mm-hmm. and that's just really mm-hmm. hard a lot of times to feel comfortable in churches places when you want us to feel welcoming but you don't want us to act these certain ways.
Mm-hmm. I think you said something really important I just want to like highlight there, and you talked about like acting autistic, and it goes back to that, like, autism is a spectrum mm-hmm. and there's so much uniqueness and diversity within that, even
it's different
from
for everybody.
Yeah, like mm-hmm. you and Hudson are very different in some of your mannerisms and the things that are affect you more than others, and that's true for every single person out there. And I think we have to be really careful because I've seen that in so many places where people are critical of like, but autism looks like this, and it's like, no, it's a spectrum mm-hmm. and we need to have empathy to say that if you're brave enough to communicate mm-hmm. or brave enough to unmask in a space, then we need to be like sorry, I'm choking.
You're okay.
We need to then be supportive of that, and we need to be affirming of that, and find ways then to even like, how can I make this feel more comfortable for you? What can I do? And so I speak that to say it's important to acknowledge that it doesn't look a certain way.
Anxiety you have to deal with every day to be ready to defend yourself mm-hmm. because a lot of times people don't understand people that are autistic, and you have to be ready to fight for people you love or mm-hmm. for yourself. And that's just really hard because for myself watching Hudson is, you and I have talked a lot about it, like, is I also have learned that about me, is, like, you learn things from watching other people, mm-hmm. and, like, that doesn't come normal for us, it's, like, manners, or, like, certain things, is mm-hmm. that, like, compassion doesn't come easy for us, and, like, we have to learn that, and teaching Hudson, if somebody gets hurt, you need to say, hey, are you okay, or, like, ask them and not just walk off, because sometimes if like they don't look like they hurt, then you're like, okay, they're fine, let's mm-hmm. keep going.
The but, social norm piece of it uh-huh. too, like, because I think you feel very deeply mm-hmm. You're a very feeling person.
I just don't always show it.
Yeah,
or you show it in ways that are different and unique to
yeah.
you.
Yes.
And so like learning to,
and then people get mad because I don't show it the way they want me to show it.
Yeah, it's not expected, so it's like I'm going to get frustrated, I go. Yeah,
you do a lot with not always necessarily like, oh, I'm going to check on you, but how can I make you feel happier? So you use mm-hmm. humor a lot. Mm-hmm. You use a lot of...
Make you smile.
Yeah, like, I'm going to try to make you... And sometimes, like, and especially I think sometimes you'll... Like, if you're feeling really anxious, if you're empathizing with the emotion and that deep emotion makes you feeling anxious, it can come off as like even some dark humor, saying mm-hmm. things that aren't always fully appropriate, but like appreciating the attempt and appreciating that connection point I think is really powerful. And just like, you know, I tell you this all the time, like I've heard you tell this them all the time, like you have some deep beautiful emotions and you connect so well with people. It's that understanding of the fact that it looks and feels differently, but
it's
those things should be celebrated
every
yeah.
person as well
yeah.
And like that's also just really hard. It's really depends on the like circumstance of what happens or something, is that it depends on how they are hurt mm-hmm. and it just depends on how I react every time, because I'm not going to react the same time, and sometimes I might not react, and that's not me, like, saying, like, I don't care. That's me, like, trying to figure out how am I supposed to react to, like, how you want me to react. Because, like, probably how I'm going to react is not the way you want me to react.
There's a lot of social calculation.
Absolutely. So, Lynn, I feel like we could sit here and talk all day about all kinds of things. And I would love to have you come back another time and talk to us more. I think there's a whole second half of this conversation that we don't really have room to deeply dig into today. And I also want to, like, give you the opportunity to give consent to that conversation of, like, how can faith be impacted, and, like, how are some of those faith concepts really hard sometimes on the spectrum. So we're not going to talk about that today, but maybe you could come back and have that conversation with us sometime if you feel comfortable.
I think I would love to add to that conversation too, maybe an opportunity for you to talk about that from a perspective as a parent and the struggle with faith spaces as a mom of kiddos that are on the spectrum.
Absolutely. So the last question I want to ask you as we finish up today is, what do you wish that people understood? What do you wish that people knew? Or how are some ways that you wish people might do better to make the world a safer, more comfortable place for you?
First of all, being autistic is not seeking attention. And we are not doing it for attention. And just, like Holly said, is, like, listening to us. We don't want to change the whole world with, like, crazy things. Just maybe make a little space for us to be able to be, quote unquote, more autistic, if you want to call that. But give us a safe place to be able to calm down. Give us some resources to be able to make a little pantry for safe foods for people that have issues of eating, or just try to be more welcoming and try to listen to them. The way you think is probably way different than how I think, so ask us and not just presume. And so ask us questions and let it actually listen to us and listen to what we're trying to say, and maybe take that as you wish, but just listen to us more.
Absolutely. I think you know, don't make assumptions. I think having conversations and trying to identify some ways to change things together, and also not being defensive in those conversations is really important. As your mom, I love you. And it's been a real joy to watch you navigate this world. You are almost 19 now, and you know, watching the way that you have grown up and you have learned how to, like Holly has said many times, advocate for yourself, but also speak up for others, to help explain to people in your world, in our world, just how the world is experienced through your eyes and your senses and your brain. You know, I think we've always tried really hard to celebrate the uniqueness of you. And I think my biggest hope for you is that you continue to see the uniqueness in yourself and continue to value that as much as the rest of us value that, because my world is 1,000 bajillion times better because you're in it and your unique perspectives are in it. You've made every part of my world better and richer for that.
I'm gonna say, I'm a better leader and a better person for the advocacy and perspectives and creativity and uniqueness that you have. I would be much different if I hadn't mentored and led beside you for a little bit, and if you were not my friend. So,
and one more thing, just be more patient with us. Don't be so reactive, please, because I know a lot of people don't have all the patience with us because it's harder, but just be more patient with people with autism, because we're dealing with the world 10 times harder and it's not as easy. So just be patient and don't get as mad as fast.
That's good advice. Any last thoughts from you, Holly?
Oh, I just agree with both of you. I think that journeying with you has been an immense privilege that I have had. You definitely have made me a lot more empathetic to the world. You've made me a better mom because I've watched you and your mom navigate this world, and that has changed the way that I parent now, and that's been really impactful for me and impactful for my advocacy. I know that I call your mom a lot with ideas of, how do I have this conversation? What do I do about this? What do I do when this happens?
That's a lot of questions to me about Hudson too.
Yeah, I think one of Lynn's comments to me often is like something Hudson will do something and Lynn will be like, that's normal, that's fine. like not that neurodiversity and normal typically go in the same conversation, but I appreciate your perspective on things, and so
don't be worried, you'll be fine.
I wish that the world had a gentler approach to embracing neurodiversity and to recognize that there's an immense amount of creativity and there's an immense amount of compassion embedded in our neurodiverse community, and I think that we would be better. Mm-hmm. And
the world is not so easy being autistic.
No, and we would be better if we would learn how to coexist in a way that elevates our neurodiverse families. So,
you know, Lynn's words to be patient and to give some more grace. I would also just say, just be kind. Just don't be a jerk. Like, that is not complicated.
Yeah.
And like, it doesn't help.
It doesn't help you, it doesn't help them. But like, if you see something that looks off, like, you don't have to make a comment about things. Like, you don't know the situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that we've definitely had to navigate, like in parenthood. Mm-hmm. You know, if we were out in public and Lynn had at the time the big shooting range hot pink headphones on, or there was a season where you navigated with like a weighted blanket or a weighted vest, mm-hmm. or some different things like that as accommodations, especially in public, to try to like help you to regulate and feel better. But you don't need to make, you know, mm-hmm. uninformed comment about comments about things, because that's harmful.
I think it'd be really cool if we looked at people and saw, like, man, maybe they're struggling a little bit. I'm sensing that, like, there's maybe, they seem like maybe they're uncomfortable or something. And our first reaction instead of was, like, that's weird, or, like, I think you used the word disturbed at one point in this. Instead, it was, like, man, they're really brave to be here. Yeah. Man,
how about you change
they're really,
the narrative
like,
about making harsh comments? How about instead of that, make good compliments? Mm-hmm. Be like, wow, I'm so proud of you being here today.
Yeah.
Wow, mm-hmm. look at you accomplishing the day, even though it's not as easy.
Mm-hmm.
Try to change your mindset of, instead of making harsh comments, make better comments.
I think that's the perfect way. Thanks so much for being brave and joining us here today and sharing your experience. It really means a lot.
Thanks for having me.
Love you guys. We'll be back again next week, and we've got a big announcement to make. So.
Woo-hoo!
I'm so excited. All right, we'll see you guys again next week.